A playlist original.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Back to the Blockbuster with your hosts, Gaius and Jackson, recapping a bit of news for you this week. Nothing huge. We already recapped the Oscars in another separate episode because considering how long that one went, if we would have combined it with this new show, it would have we have a new threshold of how long the episode should be, and it would have been way too long if we combined both. So
absolutely.
This is separate this week. Not like a lot of huge stuff in news, but enough to kind of, I guess, get certain people excited if they're, you know, if they're excited for these projects in general.
A lot of sequel news, too. So,
yeah. We did mention in one episode that there was a huge percentage of sequels and stuff coming out this year. And one of them is kind of another redo of The Karate Kid. I guess not a redo because it's in like, Ralph Macchio and Jackie Chan are in it. Now, Ralph Macchio, of course, is in the original trilogy of movies. And then, of course, is on Cobra Kai. And then Jackie Chan was in the remake with Jaden Smith. So I guess we're kind of crossing the universes of the original movie. And
I can't think of any other remake example of that happening.
Yeah, me either, really.
That's really strange.
But we have some more cast. They filled out some more of its ensemble cast. Ming-Na Wen, who you might know from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's voiced in Mulan. She's in a lot of stuff. She's a really great actress. She has been cast in a role. Most of these roles are under wraps. They're not telling you what they're doing in the movie, but she just recently cast Joshua Jackson, who you might remember from back in the day, Dawson's Creek or Urban Legend. We just saw him in Cruel Intentions last week.
Yeah.
But he's also been a big TV guy after Dawson's Creek. He was on Fringe for several seasons, The Affair. He's done mostly TV, but he is making his first film role appearance in almost 10 years, joining the cast of The Karate Kid sequel. Again, an unknown role, but they said it's one of the film's main characters. And then Sadie Stanley from the Freeform teen drama Cruel Summer has been cast as the romantic lead in the movie. And Ben Wang actually is the Karate Kid in this film. He is from the American he is from a TV shows, and he was actually found in a huge global search to find the new Karate Kid.
I was gonna say that must have been quite the casting process to narrow that down.
Yeah So I don't have too strong of feelings. I still think, I guess, if they can make the whole blending of the universe's work from the remake and the original movie. I also wondering how much this Cobra Kai, if that fits into the films as well, because Cobra Kai is hugely popular, and I know they're I think they're filming their last season, or it might already been shot already, you know, the Karate Kid had a huge resurgence because of Cobra Kai on TV, and this movie is expected to come out December 13th of this year, so it'll pretty quick. But what is your kind of exposure to The Karate Kid at all?
Not much. I hesitate to say that I've seen the remake. Like, I think it was playing on, when did it come out? Like 2010, 2012?
Let me see.
I think 2010. Yeah. I think I saw it like
that old. Jesus Christ.
I definitely didn't see it in theaters or anything like that, but like I have some memory of seeing it. I have not seen any of the originals, sadly. I should really change that.
The first one's good.
I'm really not invested in this.
First one came out in 84, so it has an anniversary this year.
That's right. Turns 40.
Oh, yeah. It's the year I was born. Jesus. June 22nd, 1984. So that'll be a fun one.
Okay, that could be a good one. Yeah, there's a lot of great anniversaries later this year.
Yeah,
that should be one that we
the first one's really good. It's a true like underdog story. Even though I do love the theories that push the whole like Daniel LaRusso, the Karate Kid is the actual bully and not William Zabka's character. Which they kind of use that narrative on the show where it's like, of course not outwardly a bully, but you know there might be more than meets the eye and that kind of friction between the two of them, which is actually made for pretty good TV. The sequels, the second one's okay, but it's not great. The third one is trash. And then the next Karate Kid, along with Hilary Swank, only Pat Morita is in it. Mr. Miyagi, it was like, I think, her first movie. It's not good either. And the remake, from what I remember it made a lot of money. I just remember maybe in the moment I thought it was fine, but I can promise you I haven't seen it since 2010.
Well, so. That probably says something. Yeah.
There's that.
Bottom line, but I don't feel anything about this being developed. If anything, it just comes across to me as a needless remake or reboot or cash grab. Exactly. Like, I don't know why this is even a thing, but maybe fans feel differently and are excited. I feel like Cobra Kai is an interesting like way to get back into this universe, and that makes sense on a different platform with it being a TV show. That's neat. And also coming from the antagonist's perspective, like, that is honestly, that's a project that works for me, even though I haven't seen it. But this just seems like this is a creative bankruptcy, if you ask me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still impressed that they got certain people to be in it, and it's a nice little ensemble cast, but I need to know more about who they're playing, and they're kind of keeping that under wraps, and I need to know more about the plot and like more about how they plan on infusing the original with the remake and all that. But yeah, the movie comes out December 13th, and that clears us up for our first round of sequel news to another sequel.
What do you think about this? Because I know you're the first film. I don't know what you... Oh, yeah,
I'm not a fan of the second one. We did cover it. Here's the deal. I got the 4K because, you know, the sequel, I mean, completist at heart, and it was sent to me. So that was one thing.
What do you make of the sequel news to I Know You Did Last Summer? Do you know anything about if it's retconning the second movie, the first sequel?
So that one, I don't know. I know that they want, like, when it was announced as like a legacy sequel to the first film. Okay. And that they wanted to include Julie James, so that's Jennifer Love Hewitt's character, and they wanted to include Freddie Prinze Jr., who played Ray in the first two films. I know that in the first press release that they said that he was contacted about a role and that she was too. Freddie Prinze Jr. said that he was never contacted about doing it. However, Leah McKendrick, she was involved in a movie called Due Revenge that was on Netflix. And Sarah Michelle Gellar had a cameo in that because Due Revenge was kind of like the writer said was inspired a lot by Cruel Intentions. So that's why they had Sarah Michelle Gellar do a cameo in that. And Sarah Michelle Gellar is married to Freddie Prinze Jr. So they know each other. Like the writer who's writing I Know You Did Last Summer and who did Due Revenge are acquainted. But he said he wasn't directly asked and he just needs to see more about what they're doing. And after that news came out, there wasn't really much more. But she did an interview with Collider and she gave some details. She said, no spoilers, but I will say that I think if you're an OG fan like me and you, I think you're going to be happy. I think you're going to get it. She also teased a social media aspect to the film that wasn't present in the original films, but would make it more modern for today's audiences. And she went on to say, at its core, I think it really reckons with some big ideas about hero and villain, right and wrong, how your skeletons come back to haunt you. And in the age of the internet and the age where fame is such a revered concept, the creation of TikTok and social media, who is Julie James in a world where there are no secrets anymore? She also added, I already feel like I'm saying too much, but I think at its core, if you watch the original, I obviously watched it 8 million times while working on it, but it's fun. It's just a popcorn wild ride. It's campy at times. Jennifer Love Hewitt is so hot. Freddie Prinze Jr. is so hot. Sarah Michelle Gellar, Ryan Phillippe, they're so gorgeous. It's like beautiful people behaving badly. You just can't get enough of it. There's a lot of that in this film. I feel like what was said right there, I don't know if you were just kind of like, nope.
I mean, I only have to say, I would just parrot myself from what I just said about this new Karate Kid movie. Like, is this really necessary? Like, can we not let sleeping dogs lie? Like, there's a reason these movies, I think, really obviously there's exceptions, and this might be one of them. I'm not necessarily, like, going to bet money on that, but there's a reason, there's a gamble, I guess I would rather say, like when movies that have a legacy that have not, their IP's been dormant for X amount of years, such as the case with I Know What You Did Last Summer. If something ends on a good term, I think reigniting that is just inviting, you know, an opportunity for that to ruin or tarnish the legacy by making an inferior final outing. And not to mention, it just comes across as like just creatively lazy. So I don't really, there's been examples like Top Gun Maverick that were huge shining successes. Do I think this will be on par with that? No, but I mean, I can't say that.
I don't, I can't even see it being on par with I guess a better comparison, right, is Scream. And I think they want to try to bring it back the same way. And however you felt about Scream 5 and Scream 6, I still think they successfully brought it into a new generation without it.
That I can agree with, for sure.
Yeah, you know, like, oh, like, this is really reaching. Like, it works for today. I think my big problem is that first movie, I Know You Did Last Summer, is entertaining. It's fun. But it's not a franchise that demands a legacy sequel.
Not at all.
And I feel like some people listening to this are going to get upset, because I know there are fans. We had some of them on our show, actually, that really love the second one. Mark is one of them. He likes it. Yeah. He likes it. It is a trashy, fun, I guess, slasher movie, that second movie, but it's not good.
Right.
I mean, like, you barely got through it.
Yeah, that was a struggle.
I mean, and I think you would have an easier time getting through the first one, which is more of it's kind of structured as like a mystery thriller rather than just a slasher movie. And yes, and there are attempts to make a better film than the sequel, which was a pure slasher film with no...
Well, I read the book that the first movie is adapted from, so I'm quite familiar with the story of it. And I think I may have seen, like, if not the whole thing, I believe I've seen much of it on, like, AMC around Halloween time growing up. So, like, I'm quite familiar. I have fond memories of the first one, like, from what I've seen of it. I would definitely need, like, to see it again to, like, really get a full sense of, like, to say that I've seen it. But I would revisit I Know You Did Last Summer in a heartbeat and not have any reservations about doing it. But again, I'm with you. Like, this is just no demand for a legacy sequel to this. I think what happened to movies inspiring similar movies? Like, is that not a thing that we do anymore? Like, I wouldn't even say that it would be, we can have a plot that's like kind of similar, but adds different things to the plot of I Know What You Did Last Summer and put that in a modern setting, and that would be fine. But like, to say it's part or a sequel to I Know What You Did Last Summer is just like, why?
I think it's interesting too. That's a good point, because there's a movie, I don't know if you ever saw Prom Night. It's like an 80s slash movie.
Yeah. Not the original. I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
Yeah. And that movie, the plot of it is like these kids, when they're younger, they cause like the accidental death of one of their friends. And then years later on Prom Night, this killer is calling them, making threatening phone calls, saying that whatever's going to happen is going to happen at the prom. I know it's very reminiscent of what I Know You Did Last Summer does, where there is a murder, and then a year later, you know, someone knows their secret and someone's after them, right? So it's like,
I see,
it's like the same kind of thing, but like its own thing too. So it's possible to make these movies without
what's wrong with doing that. Yeah,
doing that. And I mean, I guess my big thing, and you know, like, we both love horror movies a lot, and I think I'm easier on franchises like this usually, but there
for sure,
I don't see the demand. Like, okay, you can say there is a audience that loves I Still Know You Did Last Summer for what it is, for it being like a trashy horror sequel. But right, I don't know anyone that likes that third straight-to-video one, I'll Always Know You Did Last Summer. And I saw it once, don't even remember anything about it. So I don't see how this is a legacy franchise. Now, I guess if you get Jennifer Love Hewitt back and you get Freddie Prinze Jr. back, and if you really want to reach into the sequel, if you get Brandy to show up, that it might excite certain people to do this again. But I don't know. Like, they tried to do a TV show on Amazon that got canceled. And
oh, wow.
It was only on for a season, but it didn't really have like a connection to like the movies. So I think that was a problem, but I don't know. I think I Know You Did Last Summer was a good one-off. It made it a lot of money when it came out. It had like a $17 million budget. It made $125 million worldwide when it came out in 97. It was very much of its time. It came out right after Scream. So, like, it was a movie of the moment, and they sequelized it way too quick. It came out a year later.
Yeah, exactly. And Williamson was busy.
So, like, it just, I don't know. I don't think it's something that demands. I do think the social media aspect is interesting, right? Because, like,
sure.
And that is one way to kind of taunt your would-be victim if you know their secret or something they're hiding. And that is an element of that a lot of like these modern reboots try to tap in on. Like, I know when they did like the Gossip Girl reboot for HBO Max, the two seasons that aired, the social media aspect was something they really wanted to focus on, because that wasn't around when the show first came out. And it did create an interesting thing of how fast information spread. Is that enough to warrant making a movie around that with that as a concept? Probably not, but it could make it different from what we've seen before. I don't know.
Again, I think it would work best if it was like I Know What You Did Last Summer, inspired by sort of project, and it wasn't just making it a sequel. Just I think it's an added burden that it doesn't need. I think it would thrive more if it was just kind of, you know, clearly paying homage to it, but like adding enough that it's original. I we're still at this place. I think we've made some strides, or Hollywood rather has made some strides recently, mostly like in the last couple of years, but there is still this tendency to hook on to IPs and make unnecessary sequels, requels, reboots, all that sort of thing. And I think it'll be a trend, you know, in perpetuity, but you know, it's just, I don't know. I sound like I'm beating a dead horse here. I always have this to say when it comes to movies like this, but we'll see. It's not to say that it won't turn out to be like a decent project. I mean, others have definitely done it and done it successfully, but not, I mean, I am waiting with bated breath. Is that how it goes? I'm not really interested, but we'll see, I guess.
And I'm not all that excited either. I mean, I love the first movie a lot. Yeah. I don't think there's much.
Was it 97 or 96?
97. Yeah, it came out the year after Scream, and was kind of like the test after Scream, because Scream did well, and then it was like, all right, is this genre back? And then that movie came out, and it was number one for 3 weeks in a row. It came out.
Right.
It was pretty huge at the time it came out. But I think a lot of people forget, it is a product of its time.
Right.
Well made for what it is, like as far as like the look and, you know, again, not just a generic slasher movie. It also kind of caught lightning in the bottle with those people that were in it. They were really big at that moment, you know, getting big at that moment. I don't know if there's a huge demand in the same way to have Jennifer Love Hewitt come back as Julie, that it would be for Neve Campbell to come back as Sydney. Like, if you're comparing the two franchises, you know? Like, I don't know if are craving that, I guess.
Nah, probably not. Scream has more longevity and, you know, just better received sequels, and that seems more of like a genuine franchise. But speaking of franchises, though, our third piece is yet another. However, I'm not as like abrasive to this title as I guess I would be, because I'm a fan of this series. Final Destination has a sixth installment coming out. Does it have a release date, or are we just like in early production?
They said 2025 is when it's coming out, and that will mark the 25th anniversary of the actual franchise. So okay, like, that would be a good time for it to come out. That is crazy. Yeah, the first one came out in 2000. I don't even want to think ahead to 2000, but I'm sure that'll be one that we will talk about when that pops up. But it has an official title called Final Destination Bloodlines. They were supposed to get started filming this a while ago, but the pandemic happened and then the strikes happened. But they finally began day one of filming last week. And this was rumored to be a streaming release, but no, it is getting a 2025 theatrical release and on IMAX screens as well. So they must be pretty invested in what they're doing. This will be the sixth installment in the hit franchise and the first in over 10 years. And by the way, in case you're wondering, it is the 10th highest grossing horror franchise in the United States. It's made $347.8 million across six movies and has grossed $667 million globally to date. They are not expensive movies to make at all, so they've all been hits relative to their budgets. How I feel about this, I think the first movie is the only good one, but I'm not taking anything away from, like, there's like a good film, and then the rest of them are just fun. So I think the first movie...
100%.
The first movie reminds me of Scream in the sense where it has this like really cool central idea, and I thought they utilized that. I love the idea of you not seeing death, and it wasn't like a manifestation or some kind of person. It was just a presence.
Unseen presence, manipulating the circumstances.
That kind of turned every day walks of life into, you know, potential hazardous dangers. Whether it's like just, you know, slipping on something in your bathroom or your microwave exploding, or being behind a
tanning bed
truck. Being behind a truck that has a bunch of logs on it, or, you know, flying a plane.
And that has stood the test of time. I still see memes and photos shared on social media of people behind logging trucks, and they're like, nope, switching lanes.
Never.
Yeah.
Never again.
That being said, like, I'm actually kind of like, I need to go through this series again. This is one of those series where, like, I know I've seen several of the entries, but like, couldn't really tell you which movie, like which ones I've seen. I've seen the first one, I've seen the fifth one a couple times a piece. I've seen the third one's the roller coaster one, right? I've seen that a couple times. But I'd be able to see the most
of the sequels. Of the sequels, I've seen the third one the most.
Okay. I need to go through these again. I actually might just in anticipation of the sixth entry, because like I could have some fun with these movies. It's one of those premises. I think you could probably make like 10 or 12 of these movies. I think they're strongest when they're not connected. I do love how five ties into the beginning.
I do remember that. Yeah, I thought that was cool. Yeah, I remember the theater, everyone kind of like audibly gasping, like, "Oh, that's cool that they did that." Yeah, it reminded me of the Paranormal Activity, the marked ones. I don't know if you ever saw.
I did not one. See. I kind of tuned out after the third.
But it's one of the like. It felt like, all right, is this supposed to be like a spinoff kind of sequel? And then towards the end, they connect it to the first movie, and I was like, "Oh, that's kind of cool." Like it kind of made up for some of the mediocrity that was present throughout it. But yeah, I thought that was cool thing about the fifth one too, that they looped it back in.
The formula of the Final Destination movies are just so good. You can just take a random group of people and do the same thing with it across several movies, and I just think it works if you keep it, you know, original and slick enough, because there's just so many different things you can explore in it. I would love to see Tony Todd in it too.
Yeah, I would hope they bring him back. What I liked about the first movie especially is that whole concept of I know they explore this across all of them, but I think the sequels are more about how cool can we kill people and less. But I did like the idea in that first movie, that whole idea, if you cheat death, does it like skip you and just go to the next person? But then eventually it has to come back around and get you. Yeah. I thought that was a really interesting concept for a horror movie and pretty freaky in its own way. I mean,
100%.
I'll fly if I have to. I don't really love flying. I'm one of those person people that have to like knock out and So I remember I saw that first movie, I was like, man, this is like my worst nightmare. And then I was like, I wonder if I was on a plane and someone was like, it's gonna explode, when I just like, I think I'm gonna get off. I mean, I've seen this movie.
Honestly, these days, if something like that happened, I bet you they would just ground the flight and reschedule it. I don't think they even take those kind of chances.
That is crazy that, Final Destination came out in 2000, so pre-9/11, like this is like very different time. Yeah, as far as like kind of these grand theatrics on flights, and like you're right, they probably would just like ground the plane and like wouldn't even take off. Like it would be an issue of like who stays on and who gets off. I think it would just everyone at that point. Yeah.
Definitely.
But yeah, I always wondered that in my mind. Like if I did hear that, like would I just take my chances? Like, no, I'm just gonna trust homie might be right. Maybe he saw something.
It reminds me of that woman, I think it was last year, that did you see that big viral video of
pointing
at someone in the back of the plane? That motherfucker is not real. Yeah, real. Funny.
She was like on shrooms or something.
Crazy. We should definitely bookmark the anniversary for the first movie next year. That would be a great cover. And
I think that's
that as a springboard to go through the series.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess we have more sequel news. But not
horrible. This one I'm excited for. You break the ground for us though.
They've been talking about doing a sequel to The Accountant for a while. This was a movie that was set up by Warner Brothers, the first film, but now it is moving over to Amazon MGM Studios. They said star Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's Artist Equity Production Company were able to license sequel rights to Amazon after the project lost its luster under David Zaslav's oversight at Warner Brothers. They said along with the move comes word of an official synopsis, and it says, when her former boss is killed by unknown assassins, Treasury agent Mary Beth Medina is forced to contact Christian Wolf to solve the murder. With the help of his estranged but highly lethal brother Brax, Chris applies his brilliant mind and less than lethal legal methods to piece together the unsolved puzzle. As they get closer to the truth, the trio draw the attention of some of the most ruthless killers alive, all intent on putting a stop to their search. In addition to Ben Affleck coming back, J.K. Simmons, John Berthall is also returning. And so is Cynthia Ade Robinson. The only person not returning from the 2016 film is Anna Kendrick. She played Dana Cummings in that movie, but she is not coming back.
Makes kind of sense that her character.
Yes, it does. Wouldn't come back. Yeah.
But I love Connor the first movie. Directed. Yeah, first one is an awesome movie from 2016. That movie is slick. I would have loved to have seen a sequel even sooner. Gavin O'Connor, though, I haven't really been keeping up with his most recent directing efforts. I do love his 2011 movie Warrior. Have you ever seen that one?
Yeah, Warrior's really good. It's so underrated. Man,
that movie's definitely underrated. I've seen that movie probably like 8 times. But yeah, super pumped for the Accountant 2 news, and I love that the main cast is coming back too, because this is a universe I want to explore a little bit more. I would take a prequel, I would take a sequel, and maybe just do three or four, but very happy for that news.
How do you feel about it losing its luster under David Zaslav and Warner Brothers? I wonder what he's like. I wonder if he's like, it's not viable, like I don't want to pay attention to it, like I'll get to it.
David Zaslav's opinions mean nothing to me. That guy is a friggin' goof. I don't know. I have no idea. I have no opinion on what I think happened back there. I say that he should just be the face of the company, not the brains of Warner Brothers, because clearly he doesn't know what he's doing half the time. So
yeah,
that's too bad though, because it would have been nice to have seen. But you know, everything happens for a reason. Maybe the cards will fall in place better this time around. Does this have a release date? Or I know this is pretty early.
No, they're filming this year though.
Okay, so fantastic.
There is at least that. So yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I like the first one. This actually makes me want to rewatch it. I haven't rewatched it in a really long time. The Accountant, but I would love to rewatch that one soon. It's been a bit.
I've seen it enough times. I'm not exactly due for a rewatch, but I haven't actually watched it in probably a couple of years. So like, I would definitely, in anticipation for The Accountant 2, I would definitely rewatch it. On this note, though, I was just kind of looking at Gavin O'Connor, the director's credits here. So he only did one movie since The Accountant in 2016. He did 2020's The Way Back, again with Ben Affleck, kind of like middling reviews.
Came out right before the pandemic.
I'm not sure when it was. It must have been early pandemic days. Yeah.
I have not seen it. Yeah. I heard that Ben Affleck was good in it though.
I remember not hearing much about the movie, but that Ben was praised. But so he's been on a hiatus since then. But his other movie that's also in production right now, I just clicked on it just to see what it was all about. Very exciting kind of a writer attached. This is written by Taylor Sheridan, who I love, who's kind of been wrapped up in the Yellowstone world. That's his babies, but he's written movies like Wind River, Hell or High Water, Sicario. Yeah. He was on a great writing streak in the mid-2010s. So he's writing, and Gavin O'Connor is directing this other movie. It's called Fast. And I know it's kind of adjacent to Accountant 2, but just while I'm on it, I guess the premise of that one is a former U.S. Special Forces officer is recruited by the government's drug enforcement agency to lead a takedown on drug dealers who are protected by the CIA, which sounds like a mix between The Accountant and Sicario. Yeah, that does, is awesome. I would check the shit out of that.
That sounds good.
Actually. Yeah. So big excited things coming from Gavin O'Connor, hopefully. And there's no cast. It's just, got a quick synopsis and it's a drama. Not sure where they're at in production, but nice. Be looking for that one.
Yeah. I'm going to flip the next news film because the Accountant was Amazon MGM Studios adjacent, and Doug Liman he directed the Roadhouse reimagining being released by Amazon MGM Studios, but strictly as a streaming release. We told you that he was boycotting the South by Southwest premiere because he was upset because they weren't releasing the film theatrically and only streaming. But after all that hoopla, he went to the premiere. He actually did show up to the South by Southwest screening of the film. After he wrote an open letter voicing his displeasure that Amazon MGM would not be releasing the film in theaters, despite what he said were positive test screenings, he wrote at the time, "Amazon asked me and the film community to trust them and their public statements about supporting cinemas, and they turned around and are using Roadhouse to sell plumbing fixtures." That is what he said at the time. But he also said in protest that he would not be attending, but he did. I'm assuming that Jake Gyllenhaal may have talked to him and told him to come, and said it would look good if he showed up to have the director support the movie. And from what we were told, Amazon gave them two options. They said, "We can give you a $65 million budget and release it theatrically, or we can give you an $80 million budget, but it's going to be exclusively a streaming release." Okay. And they said all involved agreed with that. So I don't know if maybe Doug Liman thought that he could change their minds, or maybe we don't know what that kind of all the behind the scenes conversations were.
Interesting.
But somewhere along the line, Doug Liman was like, "No, I know this was greenlit under MGM before Amazon acquired MGM, and that is when things Roadhouse changed a lot. But, you know, at least he showed up to support the movie. And so far, out of 23 reviews, I know it's not a lot, but it has a 74% fresh rating so far.
Well, yeah, its first 12 reviews had it like a 96, and I saw that. I was like, okay.
Oh, I knew that was coming down to earth.
Like, grain of salt. Yeah, no, definitely. I've heard that it's fun, but
yeah, so I heard it's fun. If it settles in like the mid-60s, like still kind of fresh, I would be like, that seems
appropriate. Right. That seems about right. Yeah. I heard that Jake Gyllenhaal is charismatic and Conor McGregor is unhinged, which is kind of all I really would have expected.
They said Conor McGregor was really fun, apparently, in the movie, and they said that he was the highlight of the premiere in Austin. They said that he clearly is enjoying himself. So, it's good that he went to go support the movie. I mean that Doug Liman went. I understand the essence of the boycott and wanting to support the theatrical experience. But like, so many people work on the movie too, not just him. And he should be there to support the film if everyone else is going to be there to do it. So
for sure. I just hope this doesn't spawn a Conor McGregor film career. God damn, I just do not want that to happen.
You're like, you can be in this because, it's adjacent to your career. Like, cool.
Right. Yeah. Stick to your guns, though, Conor.
Yeah, I'm not. That's one of those things where Jake Gyllenhaal is going to be like, oh, he's so good in the movie. I'm like, I know you got to say that. Maybe he is.
Mm.
Like, good for the part, I guess.
For sure. Yeah, that seems likely.
All right. Well, here's some other news. I know we said we weren't going to talk about TV a lot more on the show, but this is still kind of movie adjacent.
This is an exception for sure. The Halloween TV series has an update. I have no idea what you're about to say, so I'm hearing this for the first time.
Yeah. So remember last October, they said that Miramax scored the TV rights to the Halloween franchise after they already have the rights to the film franchise as well. And they said Miramax Head is now providing some details about the show. He said not to expect a continuation of David Gordon Green's Halloween trilogy. He said the foundation of it is the original film, the John Carpenter movie, the characters of that film, and perhaps a group of characters that we haven't really focused on that much in recent film versions, or even in a number of them. He continued by saying it's a creative reset completely and going back to the original film, as opposed to spinning out of any of the more recent film adaptations. He also said they're fast-tracking the series. He said that we've had a lot of exciting conversations in recent months with a number of really talented people, and I think we'll have a pretty good idea of what we're going to be doing very soon. We're hoping to lock down the creative team on this project very soon as well.
Okay, so what I got from that is we're going to lock down our creative team, so i.e. we don't have our creative team locked down. You said something along the lines of we're going to settle on what approach we're going to take to the series. We're going to fast track it. So this just seems like it's I'm not happy with what you just said right there. I'm fine with the TV series, but if you don't even know where creatively you're going to take the show, what is the rush on getting it out? Like, that just spells disaster
for me.
What do you think? What'd you make of I like that there's an update, but that's just
I like the idea of the show. I remember after when they said that it was a issue of like film rights, TV rights, I was like, I wouldn't mind seeing a Halloween TV series. Some people online pitched really cool ideas. Someone was like, do a prequel series about Dr. Loomis and like his, like maybe his involvement with like a young Michael Myers, and seeing not so much like a Rob Zombie version of that, but like, you know, a good one,
but
like a
maybe good version. what Rob Zombie did, but better. Like, I would like to see a little bit of Judith and like what he does to Judith, maybe lead the series on, and then spend the rest of the series with him and Dr. Loomis at the psychiatry, and then like him break out and then lead into the John Carpenter film. That would be sick. Yeah.
I also think there is a place where you can kind of do both at the same time, where this kind of reminds me of Lost, where there's like maybe flashbacks to stuff that happened earlier. Also bringing it back to present day. Now, I don't know if present day for the show would be 1978.
I'd like to keep it back there. Yeah.
But like a combination of the two even works. I think that would be kind of cool to kind of go back to the beginning and then kind of, because I think, of course, with the Halloween TV series, you want the face of Michael Myers on it. So I guess that would be the problem with the prequel, is that you wouldn't have the shape as we know him, right? It wouldn't be like the William Shatner white spray painted mask and all that.
Yeah, but I get that that would draw in viewers, but I think for the sake of the story, I mean, as long as you have Michael as a character in there, I think it'd be cool to tread new ground in that series. How many different iterations and versions of like the Halloween story and Michael have we gotten over the 40 years, right? True.
43. And 40, speaking of that, I want to ask you, I mean, we've had a lot of movies with her, and I'm not saying Jamie Lee Curtis, because she's definitely not coming back to do any of this stuff, but do you do Laurie Strode again? Or you focus on someone else new or entirely? How do you go about doing that?
Michael is a crux of the show. Let's see how he interacts with different characters. I like Dr. Loomis. I think that would be cool. I mean, yeah, he's a character we've seen a lot of in the Halloween series, but Laurie Strode, I love her. She's had her thing. She defeats Michael in David Gordon Green's series. There's nowhere else you can go with that. So that doesn't come as a surprise that they're not expanding that story. I think her arc's complete. So yeah, let's see what else he was doing
I like the Dr. Loomis thing, because even though he is in so many of those movies, we don't know a lot about Dr. Loomis. Like, you know, we know that he kind of has this, like, you know, battle of good and evil thing with Michael Myers and all that, right? But like, but we don't know like a ton about his actual background. I think there's something that could be taken from that, and it'd be really interesting to kind of mix in with like this kind of new Halloween lore, I guess. And like you said, there's options to explore other characters. I know some people would love Jamie, that character, to come back in some way. The character that Danielle Harris played in the fourth and fifth one as a little kid. She can come back as an adult. I know she has always wanted to. I know she came back as Annie in the remakes and all that, but she would love to play Jamie again. And she loves the franchise and she loves the fans. So that'd be a cool way to include her and focus on that character, because, you know, we talked about it when we covered the fourth one. The fourth one is a fan favorite sequel of the bunch, and they really love her. So that's one route to take it. I honestly don't want to see any more Laurie Strode. That has nothing to do with not liking the character. I think the character is great.
It'd be a disservice to the character at this point.
I think we have seen her arc different times. we mentioned before, Halloween is a choose your own adventure kind of franchise. Where if you want to watch 1, 2 H2O, and that will be your scenario, her story wraps up fairly okay there. If you want to do 1, 2, 4, 5, 6 and just focus on she's in those first two and then Jamie takes over, whatever. And if you want to do 1, 2018 kills ends, you can also do that. So
there's a lot of different ways to approach the series, for sure.
Yeah, and if you want to just watch the Rob Zombie remix, cool.
I think what I have slated for this October's watch, because I'm the most removed from his movies. So I think I might at least get his first one in on Halloween this year.
Oh, you gotta watch ends too, huh?
Yeah, dude, I might. You know what? I'll probably just do ends instead of doing 2018 and then kills, because I do got to finish up the series, painful as it may be.
But yeah, I mean, I like the idea of the TV show. I think there's a lot of interesting places they can go.
Hey,
but I
do agree with your
assessment of his comments. Or like, hey, we've been talking to so many creative people, but we haven't really pinned down what we're doing. But we want to fast track it. So
yeah, that's like, I don't like that. Yeah. But I'm excited for the show.
It's gonna be fast. Yeah.
And
again, man, like, I'm also, this franchise is still viable, and like it makes me kind of crazy as a horror fan that I love that it's still a thing that they think can still be profitable and all that. But it's crazy that this is the only one of the biggies that's around right now. Like Friday the 13th hasn't been around, Nightmare on Elm Street hasn't been around, Chucky is thriving on TV, right, which is another good example of like how that works. I think Hellraiser would work really well on television as opposed to doing a bunch of movies. Like a really good, like, no holds barred limited series on like a streamer or whatever would be really good for that.
Hellraiser would be a great pairing with A24. I think that would be so awesome. I would love to see that.
Yeah. So I do like the idea, you know, but I would love to see, you know, Freddy or Jason. I know that the Friday the 13th legal stuff is, I think it's over. I know we're going to get that Crystal Lake series hopefully soonish. I think they're trying to get back into that now the strike's over. Don't know if we're going to get another movie, but we'll see. And Nightmare on Elm Street, I don't know where that lies right now. I mean, it hasn't been on the big screen since the remake.
10, or 2009 or 2010. I can never remember.
I think it's 20. I think it came out a year after the Friday the 13th. So I think 2010. And so it's Yeah, so it's been a while for that one as well, but at least we got Halloween, I guess.
Yeah, something to look forward to at least.
Yep. And now we got some box office. All right, guys, I guess families were really starved for stuff to go see because Kung Fu Panda did take the number one spot.
Oh, it did, eh? I predicted that it wouldn't.
We thought, well, so did I. I said Dune would gross 50 and that Kung Fu Panda would gross a little bit under that. But no bad news here for Dune. Our Kung Fu Panda 4 grossed $57.9 million over the weekend. Probably makes it one of the most consistent franchises for kids. Like, they've all opened well. They all done well.
Yeah.
And they actually slashed the budget on this majorly because some of the big name talent didn't come back. And I think they saved a lot of money that way.
Okay,
so
nice.
So it's going to be a hit. Dune Part 2, good news. It fell less than 50%. It only fell 44%. And it's
okay. What am I? I'm reading 62.
Oh no! Variety. So it's,
what am I looking at?
So I have Box Office Mojo has the actual numbers now for the
weekend. Okay, sweet.
It made $46.2 million to land in second. It has made $157.2 million domestic and $369.6 million worldwide so far. I think this weekend, since there's not really a huge big movie coming out, that it will probably hold really well in its third weekend too.
So, what's the conversation right now around its capacity to reach a billion at the worldwide box office? Is that kind of out of sight now, or is it still on track? Because I predicted that for this movie.
I don't think it's totally out of the question yet. It just depends on how well it holds overseas. This, I mean, it had a really big weekend in China. I think it made like $20 million there.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of it's fueled by these like IMAX showings of the movie. Again, if it gets like 7-8, that's still great. I think the break even point was what, 500? I think that was like or somewhere in there for it to break even.
I can't remember. I just remember the budget was 190, which is still pretty impressive. So yeah, that makes sense if it would be around the 500 mark. Usually it's times three the budget. So yeah.
So it's still doing well, and I think we're gonna get Doom Messiah no matter what. But you just gotta give the director a time. He doesn't want to rush it.
It actually was quoted this week as saying Dune Messiah is barely an embryo in terms of its status. So I think he's working on writing it, but he's taking a slow approach to it.
Yeah. Well, that's fair.
That's something. Yeah. It's at least
I don't want to rush it.
Yeah.
I have a friend that read Dune Messiah and didn't love the book. So he's like, hopefully they can like turn that into a good movie. And I was like, okay. That's interesting. So we'll see.
From what I know about the book, it seems like there'd be interesting places to explore. I'm sure there will be things that can't make it to screen, but yeah. I'm really excited for where Dune 2 left off. It would be an absolute travesty to cinema to not have a complete arc to the stories that Dune Part 1 and Part 2 have, you know.
Yeah, because
that's
the end of the way where there's more. We could do more.
Yes, there's a lot more coming in the story.
Yeah. An Imaginary opened this weekend too. It made $9.9 million over the weekend. That's better than it deserves.
You saw your review on that.
Yeah, it's a $10 million Blumhouse movie. It's gonna turn a tiny profit. It's gonna drop like a ton of bricks next weekend though.
Yeah.
I just wish they would take better care into making. Because they're not, all their movies aren't bad. Like Blumhouse has made some good horror movies.
But they're tarnishing their brand by letting these shitty ones slip through the cracks and greenlighting more and not, you know, taking good care of the Blumhouse brand. I agree.
Yeah, and Jeff Wadlow is a nice guy from what I've seen. But he gave us Truth or Dare and that and Fantasy Island.
Okay.
They have not been good. And I don't know. At least they keep their movies cheap, so they're not losing a ton of money.
Yeah, that's good.
Even Night Swim turned a profit, and he made like $33 million.
I saw Stephen King actually praise that movie today.
So is this like, you know, why? Sometimes Stephen King says shit, and you're like, all right, I guess I should respect you because
the guy knows horror, but like he didn't see the same movie I saw.
Apparently, they gave him.
You still haven't seen it? Yeah, clearly you haven't seen it, eh?
I think I need to watch it now because
I mean
it can't be worse than, or maybe it is worse than imaginary. I don't know.
That's a good thing. I mean, obviously, it'd be cool to compare those two, and now you have Stephen King's endorsement. If you do see it, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, and you better post that on Letterboxd.
Yeah. I feel like my meme was, you always like crack up with the meme ones that I'm like, star to have. Or the one I didn't even like, I honestly didn't even say anything about Madam Web. I was kind of like, eh.
Yeah, there's that. Just going to log it. Yeah. But what movie is coming out this weekend? What are we predicting here?
So we have Arthur the King starring Mark Wahlberg. Excuse us.
And if no, sound too not a Knights of the Round Table adaptation. Has nothing to do with the legendary King Arthur. I had it on IMDb here a moment ago, and now it's gone. I was going to read the premise of this movie. Pull it up. For those that don't know.
I got the Wikipedia. So it is based on a 2016 nonfiction book called Arthur, the Dog Who Crossed the Jungle to Find a Home. And the plot is a group of mountain climbers venture into the mountains to compete while coming up face with a surviving stray who becomes attached to the head of climbers. I could see this doing okay, because like, I don't know if you remember that movie, A Dog's Purpose. That movie made some money. It's because people love dogs.
Oh, yeah. I remember that movie was plagued with like allegations of like abuse on set.
And animal cruelty and all that. Yeah,
like PETA was very upset, I think, about it. There was an inquiry. That's all I remember about A Dog. I never saw the movie, so.
I saw it. I mean, the whole concept of like your dog being kind of reincarnated, like through another, like it becomes like another dog and like finds its way back to you. I thought that was kind of like, that's it could not tug at your heartstrings like
of course
bit.
Yeah.
But I don't know, this very much feels like a Mark Wahlberg paycheck movie, so I'm throwing it in that category. He hasn't been anything really good in a long time.
Guys just like going paycheck to paycheck, it seems.
But yeah, Simu Liu is also in this movie, and Natalie Emmanuel. They're not like huge box office players by any means. Good actors, but you know, not box office draws. So the tracking for this one, the low end is $12 million, the high end is $17 million.
Jeez. All right.
But bear in mind, now maybe I'm watching the wrong stuff. I have not seen any trailers for this.
I have not seen a lick of this movie anywhere, like literally not even a single thing until you brought it up that we'd be covering it today.
And I could be seeing the wrong movies, but I have also not seen a theatrical trailer for it, anything that I've seen. So bear that in mind.
Tracking 12 to 17. I mean, I am still very much thinking that Dune is going to continue its success at the box office, so I think that's going to play a part. I'm with you, though. I mean, dog movies do have their lovers, but like I'm gonna go in like under and go like 10 million. Okay. Again,
I'll do on the nose low end for it. This is 12, just as
cool, people keeping it close. Dogs. Yeah,
now I know we did last weekend, like whether or not Dune would stay number one or King Kung Fu Panda would take
keep
it.
And it. Took it. Yeah,
but I want to throw in addition to this just right now. As far as the decline, can Dune, if it depends on how much Kung Fu Panda declines, right, in its second weekend, could Dune go back to number one, or will Kung Fu Panda stay number one, and Dune 2, and whatever, Arthur the King, wherever it falls. Clearly, we don't care where Arthur the King ends up. It's the new release of the weekend, guys.
It's a good question. I want to, like, put that out in the universe and say Dune is going to reclaim its top spot at the box office, but, like, as long as it holds and does well, I'm going to be happy for it. I think, obviously, there's quite the appeal to the fourth Kung Fu Panda installment. So I'm going to guess that it'll probably just stay up there and maybe it'll be a little closer battle. But I would guess that it maintains its top spot. What about you?
I think it might a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised if it... Again, there's no real competition. So I guess for both these movies, they're going to be they're going to be the overall choice. Even I think families are still going to choose Kung Fu Panda 4 over Kung Fu the King, and Dune is going to be the choice for everyone else still. Yeah, so.
Agreed.
And, yeah, I guess we will find out. And nothing for imaginary.
No, junk. Yeah.
And that wraps us up. That was quick.
Yeah, a nice quick little news week. Good to get some stuff out there, though, that slipped through the cracks amongst a busy Oscars weekend. Yeah, and I'm sure there's probably some other stuff, too, that we might post to the channel as things come out. But if you haven't yet had the chance to check it out, by now, our Oscar recap episode should be out. That was episode 156. This has been episode 157, a quick little news week recap for you guys. Check us out next week. We got some more, actually, for the remainder of March. We've got three more anniversary episodes coming your way, starting with Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead from 2004, turning 20 this month. And then later in the month, we've got Heathers and 10 Things I Hate About You still coming out with the anniversary episodes for those movies later too. And then, of course, got some other special episodes lined up that you can catch on our channel. As always, you guys know where to find us. You can find us anywhere that you guys get your podcasts. Of course, check us out on the Playlist app. Anybody can access that from their app store. Check us out on there. Love Playlist and all that they do for us. And also coming to YouTube too, you can find Back to the Blockbuster on YouTube now. More content will be coming out on there in the coming weeks and months. We're just kind of getting it off the ground, but just another place that you guys can listen to us chat about movies. It's always a pleasure to do so. And yeah, stay tuned to the channel for our upcoming episodes. And thanks again, guys, for tuning in and making this possible. Love yous, and we will see you on the next episode. Gaius, as always, a pleasure, and I'll see you next week.
Peace.